Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with Dr. Bill Campbell, fat loss researcher, exercise science professor, and creator of the research review Body by Science. Today, Bill and I speak about body composition changes throughout the menopause transition. Is it possible to gain muscle in that phase of life and his upcoming research? If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Bill. Dr. Bill Campbell, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me again. My second time.
Yes, it is my absolute pleasure. And I know that we're going to talk about a lot of interesting things, just like in about a year ago in our first round, especially since your research has shifted a little bit. So I'm really, really excited to dig into all things menopause, transition, and what you're working on right now. But before we get into that, I would love to hear from you. What's the number one thing you're excited for our listeners to learn from this conversation today?
The number one thing I would be excited for the listeners to get would be an understanding of where my research is going. So that's I'm very passionate about my research, and it's going to be fun to talk about that.
For sure. Yes. And as I was saying before we started recording, I really, really enjoyed the presentation that you gave in regards to the menopause transition a few weeks ago at a conference that we both attended. I as an attendee and you as a presenter, obviously. Why don't you tell us to start off with what made you interested in the menopause transition in the first place? Because technically speaking, you're an exercise scientist, you're a physique researcher or fat loss researcher. So yeah, the question comes up as to why that interest in the menopause transition.
Yeah, that's a very fair question, and probably a question I get a lot. Sometimes I get a little anger thrown at me because I'm a man and like I have no business studying this. So I have to feel that one sometimes. Essentially, my whole career's been focused on fat loss. So I also have done a lot of sports nutrition performance enhancement work, but I've always loved fat loss and building muscle. And that's what I've studied. It's just that historically I've put these efforts into a younger, mostly female, metabolically healthy population. And the change, and as efficiently as I can say it, is I watched my wife go through menopause, and she had a lot of issues going through that. One of those issues was gaining body weight. And that was something that I felt very prepared to help her because I'm a fat loss scientist. So again, I've published a lot of studies. I go all over the world speaking about fat loss and evidence-based strategies. But in this case, I was not successful in helping her lose body fat with all of the methods that I had used in my research studies and that have helped, you know, probably thousands of other people. And once I started to talk about it publicly, I got an avalanche of communication from other women saying, this is not only your wife, this is my story. Even today, I bet you I have 10 direct messages in my Instagram, literally just saying, hey, I've gained a lot of weight recently. What I used to do is no longer working. So that was the reason it got on my radar was because of my wife's experience and my ignorance, I don't know if it's not just my ignorance. I don't think we have an answer. We don't have a scientific answer to this yet. I think the circles that you run in and that some of the people that I've been speaking to, I'm hopeful that some of the strategies can help with this. But that's it. My wife put me on this path without her wanting to or even knowing that it was happening.
And so once you sort of felt a little bit frustrated that your usual, quote unquote, strategies wouldn't work with her, what were your first steps?
Ooh, and I love your questions. I told you that before. When I hear your podcast, you always ask the perfect next question.
Thank you.
So I think as a scientist, my next step was, okay, if my wife's experiencing this and all these other women are experiencing this, the first thing I have to ask myself is, what's going on? Like, is this true? So historically, or in my, in recent years, or let me just say prior to this, when women would say, I can't lose weight and I'm watching what I eat and I'm exercising, and I would have said, well, you're not really watching, you're not really on top of your calories. Like, you're underreporting, which is true, in my opinion, most of the time. Most people, men and women, who say they can't lose weight, if you are to focus on improving their tracking and being in a deficit, most of the time that is going to solve the problem. They weren't tracking correctly. But why in this case did I question it? Well, one, I helped my wife. I gave her exercise programs, I gave her nutrition programs. So I live with her. I saw that she was following it. And I also had the advantage of his, in the past when she would go on diets that I would help her with, it always worked. So this time it just didn't work. But that's just one person. Yes, I know my wife better than other people, but what about some other women? Well, other women were telling me this, and they were former bodybuilders or they're fitness professionals. They're the women who I didn't really have a that I didn't doubt. Now, again, if you're 27 years old and you started working out and you say you can't lose weight and you're dieting, I don't believe that. I believe that you're not really in a deficit. There is a certain subset of women that are going through menopause, in my opinion, that are doing everything correctly. Again, they've been like, I mean, literally, it's people like you who coach other women, who know all of the science, the tricks, the, and again, you're not experiencing this and hopefully you never will, but it's people like you that reach out to me in confidence, don't share this. They're telling me this. And these are women that I've known for, in some cases, a long time. It's like, well, what do I do? Do I call you a liar? No, but I can't. But I don't know why it's happening. So that was the first thing I had to do, was like, what do I do with this? So the first thing is, I need to at least get the concept into the research literature, because there is nothing to acknowledge this. So that's my first goal. Now, I'm not saying it's true yet. Just because I believe it, maybe all of these women are still underreporting. Maybe my wife was sneaking donuts at midnight. So I have to also still be objective because I'm a scientist. But the first thing I want to do, or my first thought was, okay, if this is happening, I have to get it into the scientific realm where we can at least be acknowledged. So that's what I hope to do in part with my menopause fitness survey. So we ask that question, we get stories. So at least then we can acknowledge it. And then now the next part is, okay, what can I do to start investigating this?
Awesome. Yeah, I love that you logically, or you thought, okay, I am taking this as a from a personal incentive and just curiosity from all the women that I have heard of and that are reporting a similar thing, and wanted to put that into a practical research scenario. And so then, aside from the survey that you have started, I know you've done a few other intervention studies. Why don't you tell us about, especially in terms of the body fat redistribution, et cetera, what seems to be happening during that time?
Well, what we know from research, so we don't have to question this, we know that women, as they age, are gaining body fat and they're losing a little bit of lean mass every year. There is a debate in the scientific literature, and I disagree, and I have had disagreements with fitness professionals, other researchers. The debate is this weight gain occurring because of menopause, or is it happening just because of women getting older? And that's a very hard question to answer, because you can't stop aging and allow menopause to occur, and you can't stop menopause and allow aging to occur. So it's really hard to delineate which one is it. So I've tended to come on the side of, I believe it is menopause specific. Not that aging isn't involved, but I think there is a menopause related cause of an excess rate of body fat gain and a loss of lean mass. Now, the loss of lean mass is small compared to the gain in body fat. Also, this is a perfect time for me to give a little context. Not every woman is going to have weight gain. Not every woman is going to lose a lot of lean mass. Some women go through menopause and they kill it. There's no problems. Other women have a horrible experience. So I don't want to, be sounding the alarm for women where it doesn't need to be sounded. But my research and my interest is in the women that are gaining weight and that are having a hard time, if not an impossible time, losing it with traditional methods of evidence-based fat loss. So that is my focus, but that is not to imply that it's a horrible experience for every woman. That's not true.
Yeah, I like that you're prefacing it that way because, yeah, just like with a menstrual cycle or other hormonally related things, very, very person dependent or very, very individual, and generalizing things or even just putting that fear bug into someone's head, is certainly not the intention, I'm sure. So thank you for clarifying that. And aside from that, so you mentioned, oh, as we age, we or women it gain weight in general, but it does seem to happen at a more accelerated body fat rate during that time, specifically more around the organs, I believe, more the visceral fat during that time. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we see an increase in body fat over the menopause transition. So this is a lot of people will call this perimenopause. And the just more globally, we have a gain in body fat, and the distribution of this body fat does not seem to be uniform. What we see is more body fat being gained in the abdominal or midsection region, an area that we call android fat. And there's less body fat being gained in the glutes, hips, thighs area. So that would be the gynoid region. So that's one thing. And some people will refer to this as kind of like a male patterning body fat gain. So it's less, women typically have a little more fat lower body, not in the android abdominal region, but that changes during menopause. Now, within this change where excess or an accelerated rate of body fat is being gained in the abdominal region. Some of that is what we call visceral body fat, and that is the fat around the internal organs, spleen, kidneys, liver, stomach, intestines, etc. So that also seems to be part of, well, not seems, that is growing at a rate that was not seen earlier in life.
Right. Yeah. And unfortunately, that I believe is tends to be the fat that is just a little bit more associated with negative health outcomes since it is, yeah, around our organs. But nonetheless, some of the research that you have published or that you talk about in your wonderful research review, I do think is still optimistic in the sense that it doesn't sound like we can not do nothing against it, and we should simply give up during that phase if we're experiencing some such symptoms, and instead we can still do a few things or some have some lifestyle interventions that are nonetheless very beneficial during that time. What would you say, or what has your research kind of shown that's still helpful to fight that quote unquote menopausal weight loss resistance?
Yeah, so in some cases it seems like for some women, not every woman, nothing is working. And that's difficult. So at this point I don't know. So let me talk about what my research, where it will be going to start answering this. So one of them I'm going to call like a feed down approach, and the other will be a feed up approach. What do you want to hear first, the feed up or the feed down?
Let's go with the feet down.
Okay. So eating down would be, I'm gonna tell a little story. So the story is We have a woman who, in her 20s and 30s, when she needed to lose a little weight, let's say she's normally eating 2,000 calories, just to make the math easy. And she reduces her calories to 1,500 calories. Again, in her 20s, 30s, and she always loses body fat when she does that. And then she stops dieting and she goes back to her 2,000 calories. What seems to be happening is a woman now in her 40s that's struggling with menopause, so going through the menopause transition. She does, she, just like in all the times in the past, she reduces her calories from 2,000 to 1,500. But this time she's not losing body fat. And it's like, well, that's weird. This always worked in the past, and I'm doing the same amount of exercise. And so then what she does is what any logical person would do and what any logical coach would do. Okay, well, let's reduce your calories to 1,300. And still nothing. All right, well, this is weird, but you just have to be more aggressive, maybe. So then we go to 1,100 calories. Now, at 1,100 calories, after let's say 6 weeks, they lose a pound of body fat. So is it working? Yeah, but is that sustainable? 1,100 calories for somebody who normally eats 2,000? No. So it's not sustainable. It's probably not healthy. There's probably loss of lean mass. So in a way, you're making things worse by chasing this body. And again, a lot of times these women have gained 10 pounds, and now they're having to, be really aggressive just to lose 1 or 2 pounds. So with that as the backdrop, kind of how I articulate what we're doing is an acknowledgement that reducing your calories moderately or even aggressively isn't working in a certain population, a certain subset. So what we're doing, and this is an actual current study that we're doing, it's happening right now, is we're leaning into this and saying, okay, you have to lower your calories. So what we're doing is we're saying we're going to really lower the calories. We're going to take it to 400 or 500 calories, which is against everything I've ever talked about. I'm on record saying crash dieting is horrible, causes very bad outcomes, which is all true. But the approach that we're taking in researching, and again, this is under the feed down approach, is we're instituting this for such a short period of time that the body appears. Appears, and this is in our early research, the body appears to be responding by only losing body fat, and then we're getting out of it so quick that it's not enough time to lose lean mass. So the study we're doing right now, and it's a case series study, so that means it's a very small, 6, 8 women in this study, and we're just saying, how do they respond to this? So what we have them doing is 4 days of walking 6 hours per day. So they're walking 6 hours every day for 4 hours for 4 days straight. And they're eating as about 1.6 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. And then we say as little additional carbs and fats as possible. So marginal additional calories. And again, the theory is, and this has been done in males with obesity, we haven't done this in females yet, is this effective to cause fat loss? And if it is, okay, that's good, but we don't want to cause harm. So the theory is this is happening so aggressively and quickly, and it's long enough for the body to lose fat, but it's not long enough for the body to lose lean muscle. So that's the theory, and that's what we're starting off with in a case series approach, which is a low-level way to do research, but I think it's the perfect way to start, and we're going to build on this with larger interventions in the future.
Super interesting. Obviously, I love that you're caveating it in the sense of this is not sustainable. People should not stay there. This has to be only for 4 days or maybe a week max or whatever. Otherwise, we're starting to see some negative effects on hormones, on lean body mass, etc. But yeah, I'll be very interested to see what the outcomes are of that and if that's perhaps somewhat of a catalyst for that fat to finally drop a little bit. And so on the other side of the spectrum, when it comes to feed up approach, what are we looking at there?
Yeah, so this one we haven't started yet. So I have a meeting with some of my research team members tomorrow to talk about this. So this is coming from anecdotal conversations I've had with women. And again, now we're getting into what your world is. So I would love to know your thoughts of this, and maybe you've even done this. So I kept hearing about menopause and weight loss. Hey, one of the best diets is a Mediterranean style diet, a type of anti-inflammatory diet. So, as women reach out and say, hey, this diet seemed to work better than any other, this is the only thing that ever helped. I kept asking questions, and it seemed like two names kept coming up, Vince Pitstick and Jason Theobald. Like, hey, I worked with Vince, or I'm one of Jason's clients. And it just seemed like all the paths led back to them. So then I started, asking questions. I knew Jason a little bit. I never had met Vince, and then eventually got to meet him. And again, I don't know if he invented this or where it came from, but I do know that Vince and Jason have used this very effectively for women who do experience weight loss resistance. So what I've learned from them is, instead of having women start on a diet, you actually change their diet to this Mediterranean style diet, and their calories are actually increasing from what they've been doing. So if they've been dieting and it hasn't been working, well, let's get them to increase their calories. So that's what I mean by feed up. So I'm going to do the same approach. We're going to take a case series approach. So again, it's 6, 8, maybe 10 women going through this approach that have identified, I cannot lose weight. Then the first thing I need to do is validate, okay, is that really true? Or can we validate that that's true? Or are you just not tracking closely? So I have to figure that out, then switch them to this diet, and then see what happens if they're able to lose body weight. What do you know about this diet? Have you ever instituted this? What are your thoughts? Because you're the pro, you're the practitioner here.
First of all, I also want to say thank you for inviting me to contribute to your research review this month, where we are specifically touching on the Mediterranean diet. I too have had Vince Pitstick not just on the podcast here, but I took his functional health certification number one, or his system. He calls it the 4F system. So part of that specifically is really focusing on the Mediterranean diet. And I have implemented this approach with a few of the clients that I thought it was appropriate with as well, and seen some really great results. And I'll tell you, just generally, aside from that system, what I think of the Mediterranean diet, I think it really, really shines in the fact that it's anti-inflammatory and high in fiber, and just really, really whole food focused. And I believe that the menopause transition overall is just a time in the life of a woman where the body becomes less forgiving. So all the toxins that we're exposed to, all our lives essentially, or all the little bit of processed foods that we might be eating here and there, the little bit of alcohol, even if it's just once a week or so that we're drinking, we're probably fine getting away with that in our 20s, 30s, early 30s, or even early 40s, whenever the menopause transition starts. But what I have seen within my clients and just talking to other people is that the body becomes less forgiving during that time. So, meaning it's not detoxifying as well during that time as it normally is. It's not taking really high intensity workouts as well during that time as it is otherwise. So, all of that means basically we have more hormonal imbalances because we're not detoxifying the hormones as properly. We have more issues just in general, I guess, even with bowel movements and so on. And so if we're consuming a lower fiber, bit more processed food diet with a little bit of alcohol here and there, we're no longer seeing the results that we were beforehand. And by simply shifting that into a higher food quality approach with more fiber, with really almost exclusively whole foods and whole foods, and not just in that sense, but also really targeted in the sense of high in omega-3s, good, like olive oil, for example, other healthy fat sources, avocado, nuts and seeds, and so on. This is really where we're giving the body a chance to thrive again, and to, like, I guess that's where Vince is implementing that name from, to where we're like flushing out all those toxins that's probably that have been sort of piling up over the course of this transitional period. So I certainly see the benefit in just in the food quality of the Mediterranean diet, and then to the point of the food increase overall. I believe, again, like to the point of the body being overly strained with stress, with lifestyle stress that we're no longer tolerating as well as we were beforehand. The body not responding as well to like high intensity exercise, and therefore cortisol just kind of increasing and so on. Simply by eating more, we're helping bringing that cortisol down. We're helping sending a safety sort of signal to the body, kind of like reassuring it, hey, you can actually process all the food. You can let go of body fat stores, as opposed to like clinging on so tightly to the body fat that we have, because it's kind of in a sort of more tense high cortisol state. So those are kind of the two really big benefits that I see from this feeding up slash Mediterranean diet approach. And I think the Mediterranean diet, where it also shines in terms of its application outside of this specific menopause scenario, is just that it's a nice, reasonably easy guideline for people to have. I think, like, obviously, as a sort of more flexible dieting slash macro coach, if you will, I am a big fan of just this concept of calories in, calories out, and tracking your specific macronutrients. But there are certain people that don't just they don't they just don't want to track, at least not long term. And so giving them something that's a little bit more easy to follow, and just a good guideline saying, like, here are the foods that I want you to eat 80, 90% of the time. You don't need to be overly strict with that, but this is kind of like what I want you to have as a base. I think that works really well, and that works a lot better than because it's so much so balanced in the sense of carbs, proteins, and fats. It's more sustainable for most people, in my opinion, and from my experience, than something like the keto diet, which could be another way to like eliminate certain things, or saying vegan or whatever, which is just a lot more lopsided in this sense. So yeah, I think as long as we also clarify with our clients at times that even if we're giving them that kind of dietary approach, it shouldn't lead to an all or nothing thinking, and it shouldn't lead to like guilty feelings when they're having once a month a piece of cake or whatever, and then going bananas on the cake just because they think it's the only day where they can have it. I think as long as it's kind of clarified as just a guideline, something to do most of the time, I think it can be re a really, really good base to have.
Okay. And you yourself have said you've seen this work. Have you seen it work in women who weren't able to lose, but like who say, I can't lose weight, and then this one was the one that helped them, or not necessarily
So we
that?
didn't implement the Mediterranean diet long term in those. I mean, yes, as a base, it was still implied that it's kind of the long term goal to mostly focus on these kinds of foods. But we were, yeah, as you were mentioning with your upcoming study there, we were gradually increasing the calories through this Mediterranean diet. They lost weight. We were reducing exercise specifically. Let's say they were doing 6 times a week strength training and a little bit of HIIT on top of that. None of the HIIT at all, just walking down to like 3 times per week, full body split of something reasonably easy, like nothing, no deadlifts, 1 RM or something like that, just more like isolation work. So we were doing that for, I think it was about 6 weeks. And with the course of the time, even though it felt very uncomfortable mentally for them, I will have to say at first, because of course they're so used to, more exercise is better, less food is better. So it is very challenging over the course of the time for them. But yeah, we did see some body fat drops during that time. And then just keeping them at kind of a maintenance or higher maintenance level, just upper sort of range of maintenance. It wasn't, we weren't in a surplus, but we were feeding them up into a maintenance because they had been under eating for quite some time, keeping them up there for a little while, probably 3 or 4 months, and then really restoring all that health sort of during that time. They were not losing any weight, and then going back into a weight loss phase. And what happened then in that deficit at the tail end of this is that they were responding really, really well. So in the end, initial weight loss, then kind of weight maintenance over that extended maintenance phase, and then weight loss a lot, weight came a lot easier, or body fat came off a lot easier than it did at maybe a similar or even a higher calorie level before they even started. So yeah, I'll be very, very interested to see what how that study goes for you once it's being kicked off, hopefully soon.
Yeah, so we're going to start the planning for it. But I agree with you. I can see the women that would, I think, benefit the most are the women who are going to have a hard time not doing a lot of activity, because that's our intention as well. Pull back exercise to a pretty, hey, this is just for a short period of time. Let's just walk, and to me, as I'm preparing to have these conversations with potential subjects, I feel like I'm already having the dialogue. Like, what you're doing now, is it working? And of course, they're going to say no. Okay, so we have to try. Like, let's try something new. And here, we have a plan for you. So to me, it's logical. What you're doing isn't working. Let's try this for, I think it's. In my conversations with Vince, anywhere from like 2 to 5 weeks, I think we're just going to make it a, because when you do research, you have to make things pretty standard. So I think we're going to do a standard 4 week approach.
Great. Yeah, I think that's probably sort of the minimum that I would do for that. And ho hopefully they will give a good buy-in and follow the protocol specifically. And of course, along with the reduction in exercise, always kind of an emphasis on the importance of sleep, the importance of just in general down regulation and stress management. And sleep is another thing that you have looked at several times in regards to your research and research reviews. Can you tell us a little bit about the importance of sleep, especially during a weight loss phase?
Yeah, so when I was younger, I would always hear people say, "Oh, sleep's important, sleep's important." I'm like, "Yeah, sleep's important." But I guess like it's not that important. Or again, I would ju it just wasn't interesting to me. And then I started looking at the body composition research on sleep deprivation, which I know you've read in my research review. And when you read those studies and how good they are and how well controlled, you I literally now say you have to put as much emphasis on sleep as you do the caloric deficit. Like, it's literally that important. And again, I had to be convinced. I was not on that train early on. So just one of the studies, I'm going to mention three studies, and I'm not going to get everything right because I can't remember study details. But one of the studies showed that people who were sleep deprived, and by the way, in this study, and I'll mention it about another one, the subjects lived in a sleep lab for like a month. They had them sleep deprived, not sleep deprived. So everything was controlled down to the number of steps they took, to the amount of calories they were eating. But in the one study where the subjects were sleep deprived, they ate significantly more calories. And they gained, it wasn't just that they gained weight, they gained significantly more visceral body fat, so the unhealthy type of body fat. And we've always known that sleep deprivation is associated with adverse health outcomes like metabolic health, cardiovascular health. Well, now that study that I'm referring to, we now have a mechanism that relates. It's not, maybe it's not just the act of sleep deprivation, it might be the increase in the visceral body fat. Another study, this is more on the muscle side of the equation. They reported that being sleep deprived significantly decreased your body's ability the next day to increase muscle protein synthesis after a protein meal. So the first study said this is not good for fat. The second study said this is not good for the of what's necessary to build muscle in the long term. And then the third study, and this one's the most powerful. Again, subjects, did they live in the, I don't know if they lived in the in a sleep ward for this one, but still very well designed study. They put subjects on a diet. They gave them the same number of calories. And I think they did live in a sleep facility for this one. And this was like they lived there for like 42 days or 30 days. They, when they were sleep deprived versus not sleep deprived, eating the same number of calories, the subjects that were sleep deprived lost significantly less body fat, lost less body weight. Their bodies were, if you ever want to know, does weight loss resistance occur? This is this study proves that weight loss resistance occurs. And in this case, it was the sleep deprivation. Because remember, let's say everybody reduced their calories by 500. Well, the one group may have lost 5 pounds of fat who weren't sleep deprived. The other group, eating the same caloric deficit, they may have lost like 2 pounds of body fat. Like it was crazy how much their bodies were resistant to losing body fat in a sleep deprived condition. So that study's specific to dieting. So that's why now I say, and you brought it up, the importance of sleep and let's just say stress. Like if you're going to go on a diet and you're not, and you, and let me, like if somebody's going through a divorce or they're moving, or if there's going to be something where they're going to be high stress, or if they're going to be sleep deprived, it is not a good time to diet because you're going to put a lot of effort in and not seemingly get the outcome.
Yeah, and I think kind of relating that back to perimenopause, if we think about what's the period of time in the life of a woman that is going through that, often in her 40s, she might have teenagers, she might still be doing a full-time job, she might have like so many things going on, maybe more than ever. So unfortunately, that's often not helping in the sense of stress and then maybe sleep deprivation during that time as well. You mentioned muscle or lean body mass there earlier too. And so what's your take or your findings when it comes to building or at least retaining lean body mass, muscle mass, throughout the time of the menopause transition?
Oh, yeah. So I wish I would have started with this. So the menopause transition, what causes it? What can we do? I start with, yes, dieting might not be working as good as it once, as well as it once did. Yes, it might be a little harder to build muscle from resistance training, but we have to have all of the foundational things under control. So what does that mean? So I just call it embracing a fitness lifestyle. You have to be consuming an optimal protein diet. That's the easiest thing to do. We need to be resistance training. We need to be aerobically fit. We need to be getting adequate sleep. So, are we getting enough sleep? Are we getting enough protein? Are we resistance training? Are we aerobically conditioning? All of those things, these lifestyle factors, we have to be doing them because if we say, well, nothing's working, I'm not going to do them at all. Well, then if you gain weight, how do we know that it's not because all of the basic lifestyle or, foundational elements of what we would say is a fitness and health lifestyle, if you're not doing them, I'm in no position to say, yeah, menopause is causing all these problems. So we have to have all of these other things. We have to be executing on all of them. And again, this is where I go back to a lot of the women that have reached out to me. They are doing these things. And that's a testament to them because if they weren't doing this, how much worse could it be? It wouldn't be any better if they weren't doing them for sure. So I think it's just an acknowledgement we have to be doing these things. And this is where I'll also say if you are in a bad place, because some women have anxiety, depression, energy levels can be horrible. Maybe we do take a step back from a lot of this stuff for a short period of time. So I don't want to add stress to a woman who, I have zero energy and here's this researcher saying I have to lift and do cardio and plan all my meals. No, I want to make sure there's some grace to say, hey, you might need to chill out a little bit for a few weeks, maybe a few months. But the way that I think about this is you look at the trajectory of your life in the future. we envision a life where you're going to be lifting weights, where you're going to be doing some type of conditioning, where you are eating a healthy diet. Now, again, I would always, there's never a time not to eat a healthy diet. But just like we talked about earlier with the 4F system, you can come back, draw back the intensity and volume for a short period of time. And I want to say that might be a good decision short term.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's wonderful how you're just laying it out that the foundations need to be addressed no matter what. There's not going to be any kind of magic pill or hormone replacement that is going to override essentially any really, really bad lifestyle decisions or just negligence of regard in regards to complete sleep or anything else. So yeah, I love that you're addressing that. So with that in place, or let's say someone is really consistent with their strength training with the protein, does the research show that we can still build muscle during that time as well? Is there any data in regards to that?
Yeah, so one thing, all the research is never on women that have embraced a fitness lifestyle. There's zero. We don't have it. It's non-existent, which is why I'm very excited. I kind of get to be a one of the pioneers, I guess, by studying fit women going through this phase of life, which my survey that we just recently released, you have to be fit or at least resistance training to even fill out the survey. So I actually put up hurdles. Hey, if you're not resisting, if you're not lifting weights, you can, it's a club. You have to earn the club. You have to earn the right to take our survey. But in general, yes, you can build muscle at any age. We have research with women in their 80s that started lifting weights that can build muscle. Now we have to acknowledge the older we get, the less muscle we build compared to our younger selves. So it's never going to be as good as when we were in our 20s or in our 30s, but we can build muscle. And one mindset that I like to tell a lot of people is, let's say I have a woman or man, and they're like in their 50s, they're like, hey, I'm not building any muscle and I've been lifting for the last 5 years. Well, if you didn't lose muscle in this phase of life, you're winning. Because the default is the loss of muscle. Now, again, not a ton of muscle at one time, but if you're lifting and just maintaining, that is a win because the comparison is you would have lost muscle and strength and functionality. So I always like to put that out there. Like it's don't let's make sure we have a proper and realistic context for what's happening to your body compared to other people's bodies. So yes, you can build muscle. I remember one study they gave early postmenopausal women. They were in their 50s. You probably remember this. I covered this one. They gave them a program, resistance training program, same program that they gave premenopausal women in their mid 40s. So think mid 50s versus mid 40s, same program. The younger women in their 40s gained significantly more muscle on the same program than the women in their 50s. Then that takes me to another study. Early postmenopausal women, they're all in their 50s. They gave one group a placebo. They gave another group a estrogen patch. The estrogen patch caused significantly greater gains in muscle mass. So that kind of, to me, the way that I piece together these different data points is the menopause transition and the loss of estrogen is causing a lack of an anabolic response to resistance training. And when we give it back estrogen, that seems to restore the anabolic response to training. Now, not every study has reported this, but I've never read a study or seen a study where estrogen therapy has made muscle building worse. It's always, it either improves lean muscle or it has no effect.
All right. Yeah, thank you for clarifying that and for putting that out there as well. And so I guess touching on the point of HRT in general, do you have any data or any research in regards to on HRT, not HRT in terms of body fat gains during that time or body composition changes?
Yeah, so I think estrogen therapy has anabolic potential. So again, I think it will help or have no impact. I don't think it will hurt. I can't say the same about body fat. And again, you asked these perfect questions. The research that I've, and let me just say, I was, when I first got into this, I didn't know much about hormone replacement therapy. So I was really hoping, one could say I was biased. I'm like, I want to read all this research about hormone replacement therapy and how that's causing fat to just melt off of women's bodies that weren't currently taking it. My wife was going to take it, and she is now. And I'm like, hey, maybe she takes estrogen and it's just like a fat, like the best thing ever. And that's not what the research says. If there's 2 points of data that I process. I have a lot of women sharing their stories with me, so we call that anecdotal. And w their feedback that I get is three things with estrogen and progesterone therapy, but estrogen I think is the main mover here. Some women do lose body fat when they start estrogen therapy. Some women don't gain, don't do not lose body fat when they start estrogen. And other women gain body fat. So it's like, ugh. Then the research that I read is the same scenario. Some research says it causes fat loss. Other research seems to suggest that it prevents weight gain. But other research you read in it, and it women, one of the studies, women took estrogen therapy, they lost less body fat when resistance training compared to a placebo. So it was actually blocking their body's ability to lose body fat. So HRT, estrogen, and in many cases, estrogen plus progesterone, it seems to be highly variable with body fat, and it seems to either be neutral or somewhat positive with respect to muscle mass.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. Again, I guess it highlights the individuality just once more. And have you looked at any data of those two hormones in combination with testosterone or testosterone in isolation for women? Because obviously that's also commonly or sometimes given as a quote unquote package deal in combination with the other two.
Yeah, so I haven't done a lot of research on it yet. The little bit that I've done, there's not much out there. It makes a, just for women in fitness who want to lift weights, testosterone therapy, just it's intuitively it makes sense because obviously it can build muscle. In some cases it can cause fat loss. Now we also have other studies that it's associated higher testosterone with higher android fat, so like central region fat gain. So it makes a lot of sense from the muscle and potential fat loss effects in women embracing a fitness lifestyle that they would want to and potentially even intake it. But no research. So that's another arm of my future research. I'm meeting about that tomorrow, where we want to start tracking women who are going to take it. And we get data before they are taking it, and then in the months afterwards. So that's the that because again, we don't really have that data. So as a case series study, what's happening? Well, let's put something out there to get the ball rolling. I'm a get the ball rolling kind of researcher, is what I'm realizing here. Not the best studies, but they're the studies that will start to force people to ask questions.
I love it. Absolutely. So it sounds like you have a lot in the works. You have the menopause survey, you have the feeding up study, you have this upcoming testosterone included project. Is there anything else on top of all of that that you're already doing that's kind of in the works when it comes to the menopause transition?
No, the other one is related to the testosterone. It's just think of it as an extension. It's the same thing with HRT. So women that are about to start estrogen and progesterone that aren't currently getting it, okay, when they get it, what happens to body composition after 6 months? So it's the same thing again, because we don't have that data. In fit women, we have it in non-fitness embracing women, but not in this population. So anything I do is better than what's currently there. And then we just need to do some intervention studies that are the best type of research. But I don't want to do that before until I get some basic knowledge of some from individual case studies.
Well, I love it. And Bill, of course, I want to make sure I'm respecting your time. So I just want to say thank you so much for all the work that you're doing, how you are pioneering in that area because it's truly needed. I love that there is more light being shed on that transitional period because it's so necessary. And just overall, you're doing a wonderful job experimenting exactly with that and combining it, particularly for us women in that in the fitness space. And on top of that, as everyone listening probably knows by now, I love your research review in general. You're just the way that you are making it very comprehensive and very accessible and very easily understandable for everyone is amazing. So thank you for that and for your time today.
Yes, yeah. Thank you for being one of my expert contributors. I love it. This was your second time, I think.
Yes,
So
yes.
yeah, thank you for doing that. And I loved your, yes, I love your professional coaching expertise. So you're the perfect expert for that.
Well, thank you so much. I will make sure to link the research review and all your handles in the show notes. And again, thank you for your time today. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Bill. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.